The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org, and they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Football is life. Get in the game. Head down to Wind River Resort and Casino to catch your favorite team on any of our 16 screens inside seasons. Score with our new Game Grub Buffet. Free spins, kickoff for cash and prizes. Nowhere else in town offers this. More football fun. Play hard, win easy. 49er tickets up for grabs all season long. Some people talk football. We live it at Wind River Resort and Casino. Details at windriver.com.
The official meeting of the business-to-business meeting is called to order. Business-to-business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press and Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
Well, I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
Not. No, business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and priced right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Hi, this is Billy Pilgrim from my buddy Doug Tooley from BNT 241-3474. You need to know that number, 241-3474, for the best service Doug and his great crew at BNT. Makes TV so easy. They're the experts. They do TV wall mounts. They did one for us. TV antennas, surround sound. They can even set up your RV or set up your boat. Doug doesn't do dishes, but he'll dust behind your TV. So for all your TV entertainment needs, no matter what it is, call the local guys. Call my buddy Doug Tooley, the nicest man in the world, at 241-3474. 241-3474. They'll be there on time. They'll get the job done on time, and you're good to go.
With over 60 years of combined experience, let us, your locally owned TV guys, help you. We know what we are doing. You can trust us.
Call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474.
Doug makes TV easy.
Are you not getting treatment for a work injury because of denials? Call me, Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, at 530-262-2168, and I will get you results. The insurance company and your employer have an attorney working hard for them. You need somebody fighting for you. When you call Gorman Law, you're going to speak with me, not a paralegal, because the last thing you should be worried about is whether or not your attorney is working for you. There is no cost until your case is settled. Consultations are free and confidential. Call today, 530-262-2168. That's 530-262-2168.
At the Wagner Law Group, their goal as a fire victims law firm is to advocate for those who have been victimized by Pacific Gas and Electric Company's negligence. The Wagner Law Group has been rated the number one fire attorney group in Northern California and has low contingency fees. So, if you or your loved ones have been affected by the Dixie or Zog fires, contact the Wagner Law Group today. Call 833-200-7111. That's 833-200-7111. Working remotely and wanting to level up by maximizing your working experience? Stop by Drop-In Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East. Rachel left a 5-star review for Drop-In. Love this place. I moved to Redding recently from the Bay Area and work remotely full-time. Started going nuts at home, and luckily, this place is a great location and meets my needs beyond my expectations. They also left a 5-star review. Very productive place. It took me a few hours at Drop-In to finish a few days' work at home. Internet is super fast. Drop-In Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East in Redding.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Posada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Fall savings are underway at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Eureka Way and Market Street in downtown Reading. Maximize your car wash savings with car washes starting at only $9. A clean car is essential to the value and even safety of a vehicle. And at Quick and Clean Car Wash, they have a variety of car wash packages to choose from. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Eureka Way and Market Street next to Dutch Bros in downtown Reading. Quick and clean.
Hi, I'm Rob Burrows from the Northern California Veterans Museum and Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. I want to invite you to our annual packages for the troops December 4th. Join us from 1 to 6 p.m. at the VFW Hall in Anderson on Center Street. $10 for adults, $8 for students with ID. Children 12 and under are free. Admission covers costs for lunch and partial shipping for a box. And hey, while you're out there buying Halloween candy, buy an extra bag for the troops. You can drop donations off every Friday between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the museum offices located at 2110 North Street in Anderson. Or bring it to the event December 4th. Again, this year I want to remind you, Homeward Bound is providing Thanksgiving and Christmas meals for military families in need during these holidays. You can donate canned goods, hams or turkeys, or gift cards. Again, drop-off for your donation is every Friday between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the museum offices on North Street. For more information, call Rob Burrows at 530-510-8210. And thank you for your support.
Reading Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Reading. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
What's your Thanksgiving Day plan this year? Black Bear Diner will be open, and you've got options. Come in for a three-course entree. Choose from turkey, ham, or prime rib. Or grab a Thanksgiving meal to go for an easy fix at home. If you're on the road, stop at one of our 145 diners for a fill-up along the way. Search for Black Bear Diner near me. Spend your Thanksgiving with Black Bear Diner. Open daily in Reading at 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve a growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Hi, this is Whitney from Timberline Heating and Air Conditioning. On behalf of the whole Timberline team, we wanted to take this opportunity during this special time of year as we gather to spend time with our family and friends. It is also a time to remember all of our veterans and those currently serving our country. So we join with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salute, sending peace, hope, and happiness this holiday season to all our veterans and service members from the Timberline Heating and Air family. Happy Holidays.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
This is RC with today's Cigar of the Month. Present with us is the Partagas Cortado. Wrapped in an elegant Ecuadorian Connecticut seed leaf, the bold 8-inch long Presidente is a soft smoke. Perfect with coffee after breakfast, the Portagas Cortado reaches sublime notes of creamy, spicy, and mineral-rich deliciousness. Get yours today at Tobacco & Brew, 2143 Hilltop, Redding, California.
Redding Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Redding Endoscopy Center. Call him at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Yet the deepest truths are best read between the lines and, for the most part, refuse to be written. Amos Bronson Alcott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. And today we're talking about one of my favorite things in the writer's toolbox.
Our topic is subtext. It's those things between the lines, the things that are implied. The things that we've talked about in the past when we tell you about world building and backstory. That is subtext. Subtext adds depth to your characters, to your settings, to your world, to your dialogue, to everything about writing. Which is why when we talk about making your outline or developing your world, developing your characters, that you know so much more about all the characters that you aren't putting in the book, so that your knowledge can be written in subtext. It's those things that you can imply by looking and showing he sees a dog and his muscles tighten and moves to the other side of the street. His breath quickens. So you can imply, yes, he is afraid of dogs and there is a story there without having to explain the story in a page and a half of useless backstory.
I would say this is a good litmus test for a skilled writer. Is there subtext in the moment? We spoke about this during our Diagnosis Writer series over the summer when we focused on dialogue. A lot of what we said was take stuff out of the quotation marks because then you're moving it to subtext and it becomes a more interesting read.
How do you write something without writing it?
One of the ways you can do it is your character probably has a tell. Every time he lies, he runs his fingers through his hair. And then one of the characters can point it out to another one, hey, you ran your fingers through your hair, I bet you're lying. That happens at the beginning of your story. The reader is informed of this particular detail. Now throughout the rest of the story, every time he runs his fingers through his hair, we know he's lying. Then there's this element of depth to the story because it's not only what the truth is of the moment, but what he wants the other characters to believe the truth of the moment is. One of my favorite examples of establishing subtext is from the more modern version of Italian Job. There's this saying between several of the characters that the word fine stands for freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Oh, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. I'm pretending to be okay, but I'm really freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. There's an elegance and an artistry to how they use such a common word in that story because they defined it to have a bunch of subtext attached to it.
So here's the danger of subtext. Say you establish something like that, and then you have a time later that they are using I'm fine literally. Suddenly things are lost in translation to the reader, because they're thinking that it's attached to all the subtext, when really you just kind of thoughtlessly threw in, I'm fine.
Your editor will point this out to you, saying, is this what you intended? Because you could have intended, he's freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. But if you didn't, and you didn't do anything with it, the editor is going to go, hey, this needs to be a different word.
Another use for subtext is to get your readers thinking about the book when they're not reading. This is one of the reasons I love Brandon Sanderson's books. There is so much subtext. Enough subtext that I can reread the book multiple times and still learn something new every time that I had missed before. And when I'm not actively reading, I'm thinking about those little details, those little elements about the stories, the characters, the nuances that just fill the books. That is probably why they're so long.
This bit of detail is especially useful at the end of a chapter because that's what will get people thinking about it while they're driving, when they should be paying attention in school, when they're in the shower. These things, when their mind wanders, if it's wandering to you, goody. That's part of the goal. You want them engaged in your story and thinking about it when they aren't actively reading the book. Subtext is also really good for getting your reader to be thinking in two ways at once. If you're familiar with film, that's called a split screen, where two different things are happening at the same time. Having that subtext established will help your readers understand a lot more of the moment in a lot less acreage on the page, a lot less time spent. We understand what one character is interpreting is different than what another character is interpreting because we know he's lying.
There are a couple of times, especially in writing, where subtext is very important. One of the first ones is when characters are lying. You rarely want to just come out and say, it was a lie. So you want to have those tells, those little nuances that show that without having to say it.
Unless, of course, you have that character who just goes, I don't believe you. They'll just call him out on it. But that is a character choice. And the reader should understand why the character is saying that, because the reader understands the subtext of the situation. Another type of story where you need to have a lot of subtext is, of course, the mystery. Because everyone is looking at all of the other characters and going, did this person commit the murder? Or did this person steal the jewels? Or whatever. Every single character is being addressed with a little bit of subtext because the reader is trying to figure it out.
You also want to have enough subtext in your mysteries so that your readers feel satisfied at the end of the book. Especially with murder mysteries, where it's a whodunit. You want the reader to be able to pick up on little subtleties here, little subtleties there, that lead them to, by the end of the book, having a pretty good guess about who the bad guy is. And that is all done in subtext.
Another great use of subtext comes with introverts.
They're not going to be blatant about their emotions. So you need the subtleties of subtext when you have a character who is an introvert, speaking as an introvert.
Subtext is the path you take as an author to make sure it's believable for your readers.
You also want subtext when you have characters that are falling in love. This one is difficult for me because when it comes to relationships and emotions, I'm pretty straightforward. So writing a subtle falling in love over time romance is not easy. But this can help your readers feel emotionally connected. They can feel like they're falling in love at the same time without being beaten over the head with it.
One of my favorite moments in the Jack Reacher series is when Reacher has been friends with and commanding over this woman who is incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. She hates being touched. There's one moment when they're in a life and death situation. They know one of them is probably going to die tomorrow unless everything happens perfectly, which of course it does. In a time when he would have slept with anyone else, he didn't. He respected her and he didn't touch her, but she reached out and put her hand on his for like 4 seconds and then walked away and went into her room. But that was the first time after like 20 years of being friends, the first time they had physical contact. And there was so much subtext in the emotions of that moment that I just loved it so much.
Subtext is also fun when you need something to sound ominous or to carry a second meaning, like the example from the Italian job of I'm fine.
If I have a character who is bleeding out and the mother figure is holding him in her arms and she goes, everything's going to be okay. You know, as a reader, everything is not going to be okay.
Another word that carries a lot of subtext is goodbye.
If you watch a fair amount of TV, pay attention to when they end a phone call with goodbye. That feeling, that sinking in your gut, that's intentional by the writers. Of course, when a character is lying for the sake of someone's emotional status, oh, I'm just kidding.
They're not. They said it for a reason. They're not actually kidding. There's a bit of truth behind every just kidding.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah, they do.
They wouldn't bring it up if they didn't.
Yeah. Or, I don't know. How many times have you met a kid where you ask them what happened and they go, I don't know.
There is plenty of subtext in all of these phrases to throw in, but use them intentionally because your reader will infer something that you might not have meant to imply.
If you have more questions about the use and what subtext is, look up actors talking about subtext. They have to deal with this a lot because screenplay writers write the text and then the actors have to act the subtext. And as the writer, you are kind of both. You need to write the text, imply the subtext in a way that your readers can latch onto it and live it like an actor would.
So if something feels wrong in the story that you're writing, try implying as much of it as you can with subtext and then bringing it back to literal, because that will give you a much richer story. Instead of him saying, I don't want to go fight the dragon, he can hesitate in putting his armor on, and he can go, well, we could always fight the dragon tomorrow. You can start implying all of these things with subtext if you're feeling that your story is falling a little flat.
A lot of the time, you just want to make it smaller. Go down onto a smaller level, which we will be talking about in a week.
But until then,
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
The cost of a thing is the amount of what I will call life, which is required to be exchanged for it, immediately or in the long run. Henry David Thoreau.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Before we get into our question of the day, I want to remind you guys that we are on Patreon if you guys want to support us. Help us out. Let us keep creating these episodes. Go there for as little as $10 a month, which is basically a dollar an episode. You can help keep this podcast going.
Speaking of money, what is our question for today?
How do you set the price for a book?
I'm going to write a book saying how to make $1 million, and then I'm going to price my book at $1 million so that if I sell one, I'll have made $1 million.
Not a good plan. Mostly because the people with $1 million are not likely going to be looking to make $1 million.
Or, Maybe they'll buy 2 books so they can have $2 million.
Still not working.
So, obviously, we're just teasing here. But it is a legitimate question that a lot of especially first-time self-published authors will ask. How do I set the price for my book? I obviously don't want to set it so low that nobody thinks it's worth anything, but I don't want to set it for $1 million and leave it out of reach.
The price of a book varies by a lot of different factors. It's the kind of book that it is, whether it's physical or ebook, hardback or paperback, audiobook. All these have different ways of pricing your book. But it also depends on the trust that the reader has in the author and the value that the reader puts in that book, not the author. Because in this case, the customer's mindset matters the most. It doesn't matter how much you want to sell your book for. If the customer sees that as too much, they won't buy it. So in the exaggerated example of selling a book for $1 million titled How to Make $1 Million, you're not hitting your target audience. One, I don't think anyone's going to pay $1 million for a book.
Maybe if it was like Da Vinci's manuscripts or something.
Yeah, some sort of ancient artifact that is priceless and never to actually be read. So it depends on your audience and what they want.
Under that category, I did want to mention that how your audience uses the book also comes into play. So if it's a coloring book, one person might buy the book more than once. If it's a comic book, it's meant to be read and then tossed over your shoulder so you can consume the next one as fast as possible.
I don't like your version of comic books. Comic books are made to be read and then carefully stored in case they become valuable later on.
Nerd. Another thing to consider as far as how you're using it is if it's a journal or a workbook, so some kind of devotional where you respond to the biblical passage or whatever. And then, of course, if it's educational, that'll also influence it because it's required for school, and so therefore they can charge an arm and a leg for it. So let's get into the pricing of how do you set a price for your book.
Let's start with probably the most expensive type of bookbinding book that you can sell in the fiction and for consumer nonfiction.
We're talking about hardbacks. Often this is the first version to be released, with a paperback coming a few months later, at least for the main author I've been reading lately. There's plenty of that. These tend to be 2 to 3 times the price of your paperback. The last one I purchased was around $30.
Mine was about $35. The thing with a hardback is if you go the traditional publishing route, if you are getting a book published in hardback, it means that you have established yourself as an author, as a trusted author, with a following of people willing to buy your book. Because hardbacks are expensive to produce. Traditional publishers will only invest in a hardback if they know that they're going to get the return on it.
Readers tend to purchase hardbacks for one of two reasons. If you're like me, you purchase it because you want to get it right away. You don't want to wait those extra couple of months for it to be cheaper. You want to be able to read it as fast as possible the moment you can read it. That means getting it in hardback, carrying it with you everywhere you go, and consuming it as quickly and possible as you can.
Readers will also get it because hardbacks are just better. You can see the camp that I'm in. I like hardbacks because they're a little more durable. They, I think, look a lot better than paperbacks do, especially after they've been read. They tend to hold up longer, but they're heavier and a little more unwieldy.
I think most of the people that I know that purchase only hardbacks do it because it's pretty. And it goes on the bookshelf, which is why I'm in Camp Paperback, because that's not where a book is supposed to be. A book is not supposed to be on the wall. It's supposed to be in my hands.
I mean, really, I'll get any kind, just so long as the series is all in the same format.
There you go.
If you buy one in hardback, the rest have to be hardback. If you buy one in paperback, the rest have to be paperback, which I have 2 series that don't match that, and it drives me nuts. One of those is the Stormlight Archive series. I bought the first one paperback because that's the only thing they had at the time. And then the new ones came out in hardback, and I kept getting them in hardback. I'm missing one of the books.
Really?
Yeah, I'm missing Oathbringer. I got that one in audiobook format only.
Ah.
So I need to get Way of Kings and Oathbringer, both in hardback, and I will be satisfied. The other series is The Hunger Games, because again, I bought the first one before it was popular, so it was just in paperback, and then the rest were released hardback. Hardbacks are going to be more expensive. Like we said, I paid about $35, she paid about $30. I've never seen a hardback for less than about $20.
If you're getting a series all at one time, they're almost always going to be in your hardback format, and so you'll be able to acquire them a little cheaper than the standard. But that's more in the classic category, where it's on your shelf to make you look smart, not necessarily so you can read them.
And of course, I've also paid like $100 for a hardback cover once.
Of a 10-year-old book, by the way.
It was the 10-year anniversary leather-bound of Way of Kings. So, favorite series, amazing, beautiful leather-bound and foil work. And that truly is a display piece. I might read it once just for kicks, but that one is going to be like, this is pretty, and that is its purpose, is to be pretty on my shelf.
So she likes pretty, I like readable.
Hardbacks are readable, they're durable. That's why I like hardbacks, they're durable.
Okay, she likes pretty and bulletproof, I like usable.
I like ones that you can use as a brick.
We've talked a fair amount about it already, but I wanted to mention pricing separately. Paperbacks tend to be about a third the price of hardbacks. Depending on your genre, especially like my genre of action, mystery, thrillers, and romance novels, those are going to be the ones you pick up at the airport. Those are $10 out the door.
I think the most expensive paperbacks I've seen are about $15, but those are, again, Stormlight Archive series size, where they're huge, they're big, they take a lot of paper in general. I've seen paperbacks range from about $4 to $5 up to about $15.
If you are self-publishing and therefore setting these prices yourself, you do have to take into account for either of these two printing costs, generating the cost of the thing. If it's going to cost you $5 to print, Amazon will not let you price it at $5. Your paperback books are the ones you are loaning to somebody else. If this is that reader's first time experiencing that author, it's almost always going to be in a paperback version of the book. They tend to be about $10. I charge $25 for my series of three. We each charge about $10 for our books to purchase either online or in person because it's an easy number for bills mostly.
Paperback is by far the most common printed format because it's cheaper, it's easier, and it's worth the investment for publishers. This also depends on the size of the paperback. Pocket-sized paperbacks I've seen go for as little as about $4, and those are usually in books that have been out for at least 10 years. And then you can get your traditional size for self-publishing, which is the 5x8 size. Most of those go between $7 to $10. And then you can get your monstrosity sizes for books like the Stormlight Archive series, where you have to make it big just so it holds together.
You'll also see your workbooks. Anything that your readers are going to be writing in are going to be in slightly larger format sizes, in which case they might not be priced higher. But you're going to see different ranges in your printing costs. I did also want to mention cookbooks, because they aren't quite hardback and they aren't quite paperback. They're sort of this sturdy tag board kind of thing. Those you'll need a specialty printer for. You're not likely to find that easily.
So let's move on to what is becoming a very, very popular reading format. That is the ebook. These are by far your cheapest options.
These you'll often even find for free. A lot of authors will release one of their ebooks for free in hopes of making it a lost lead where somebody will read it, they'll fall in love with you as an author, and then purchase your other books. That doesn't always serve you well because of the perceived value versus actual value conversation. But the last time I purchased an ebook, it was about $2.99.
Mine was about $2. I think it was on sale at the time, and it was the first in a series.
When I'm setting my prices for this, I set them at 99 cents because I am happy to take that loss and just let as many people read my books as possible. I am not writing in order to make a profit. I am writing because I enjoy it. I wrote for almost a decade without publishing anything because I didn't care. So pricing for me tends to be a little under market just because it's easier to put it out into the world. People are willing to take a risk for pocket change far more than they are for the cost of a cup of coffee.
Ebooks are also a really good way to do giveaways and help promote your brand, because there's no real loss for you. An ebook is free. You may have spent a little bit on the formatting costs or the editing or something like that, but it doesn't actually cost you to print the ebook. It just exists.
Whether you sell a 1 or 100, the price to you is going to be exactly the same. Most of your short story collections and anthologies are going to be in the ebook category, simply because you have a whole bunch of contributors who want to make sure they have it on the shelf. They don't necessarily want to pay for all the printing costs and all of that because they're just trying to get it out there so that people will read something of theirs.
So for the pricing of ebooks, it usually ranges from about $1 to, I think at most I've seen, is about $15. And those upper ranges are only for well-established authors with large books. I have never seen a published ebook do well at more than about $3.
Another option we want to mention, because this is a wildly growing market with a lot of people wanting to read your books this way, and this is via audiobook. If you are listening to our podcast and therefore hearing what I have to say, then you are already part of that market group. Because podcasts are free, but audiobooks are really expensive to make, this is going to change your price dramatically depending on the person putting your audiobook together.
Audiobooks tend to be almost as expensive as hardbacks in some cases, because there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of people that have to contribute to the process of making an audiobook good. Because you have the narrator that needs to get paid, you have the editors and audio editors and producers that need to get paid, and of course the author.
One of the most popular places to get and publish your audiobook is Audible. And on the reader-listener end, if you have a subscription, then you can get one free book a month.
Kind of free. You pay $15, that $15 gets you a credit, and that you can use to buy books. So what I do, because I'm cheap, if it's less than $15, I will buy it on my own. If it's more than $15, I'll buy it with a credit.
Now, most of your bestsellers are going to be in the $18 to $20 range.
Again, depending on the length of the book. I keep referencing the Stormlight Archive because that tends to be the extreme just based on how long it is. Every single one of those audiobooks is around 50 hours long. That is a long time for the narrators to be sitting in a booth talking.
When we made Black and White into an audiobook, it was about 70,000 words, and that was about 11 hours of runtime.
And that's runtime. That's not recording time. So again, this is an expensive way to start, but you need to base your price on the resources you put into it. If you narrate it, which I don't recommend, but you can do.
Unless it's nonfiction, in which case you want to be paired with the knowledge associated with your content.
But if you narrate it, you can set the price lower, which will likely mean you get more people to listen to it because they don't feel like they're putting a major investment into something that's going to turn out maybe not as good as they hoped.
I did want to mention really quickly that if you are advertising for your books, you're going to advertise differently depending on the types of these books that you are selling. That should be wrapped into the prices that you're setting for the book.
By far, one of the most popular places to publish your book is through Amazon's Kindle Direct Publishing. Real quick note here, because I do see this question a lot on online forums, KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, is not the same as KDP Select. KDP Select is an optional service you can subscribe to per individual book. It gives you a few more resources for advertising and setting different prices on your books, but they are different things. So just publishing through KDP does not have the same exclusivity requirements that KDP Select does.
When you go to set your pricing for your book on Amazon, you're going to run into two major options. In the U.S., that's a 70% option and a 35% option.
This is your royalty plan. You can get 70% of the royalties, which is the profit of a book, by setting it in certain ways. This has more restrictions, but you do get more of the profits.
Your minimum list price for your ebook under that plan is going to be $3.
And the maximum price is $10, $9.99. So you have a very limited range of what you can price your book as, but KDP, Amazon, they have analytics that show books within that range are more likely to sell more, so they are more willing to give you more of the profits. Now, if your main customer base is in Brazil, Japan, Mexico, or India, you must also be enrolled in the KDP Select that I mentioned to get the 70% royalty. But if your customers are elsewhere, you don't need to be enrolled in Select to get the 70% royalty plan.
The other option is you only get 35% of the profits coming in.
You have freedom of pricing with the 35%. You aren't restricted to just $2.99 or a max of $9.99. You can set the minimum price as low as 99 cents. Which, if you're just trying to get your name out there, get people reading your book, this is a good way to do it because people see 99 cents and go, oh, I can invest a dollar because that's not much cost to them to invest in something. Their standards may not be very high for it, but 99 cents is generally a pretty good deal for something.
They also allow you to price match, quote unquote. If your book is being listed for free in digital format somewhere else, then they will price match $2.00 to free, but they don't like it very much, and they make you go through a bunch of extra hoops to do it. Quick side note, if you choose a 70% option, then your digital book must be at least 20% cheaper than your physical copy.
Which isn't too hard. What I did to help with that is I put my ebook at the minimum list price at $2.99 and my physical book at the maximum price of $9.99. Generally good range. It'll give me the most profits for both books, and both are about prices that people don't mind spending, and it's easy for me to collect at those prices.
So if you haven't had enough math yet, we've done a couple of other episodes on how to approach different types of publishing in our second series that we released last September. And if you have more questions on the different kinds of mediums, we've done an episode on that as well.
The biggest thing to remember about pricing is that it's not really up to you. Yes, it is. You get to set that price. But if your customer base thinks that that is too expensive, it doesn't matter what you set the book at, you're not going to get any profits if the book doesn't sell. So remember to keep your readers in mind while you're setting the price. What would you be willing to pay on a book of the same quality? What would you be willing to pay for an ebook, for a hardback, for a paperback? keep these things in mind as you're doing this. It is a lot of math. It is a little bit of work. And look at what you want out of it. Are you like me who, yeah, I kind of like a little bit of the extra profit, mostly to cover the cost that I put into publishing? Or are you like Lee, where the cost doesn't matter, you just want to get your story out there because that's what matters, is the story, the creation. If you have gone the whole process doing what we always tell you, continue to do that even in the publishing, even in the pricing. Because what you should always do is
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
She was of divine stock, not of men, in the forepart a lion, in the hinder a serpent, and in the midst a goat, breathing forth in terrible wise the might of a blazing fire. Homer's Iliad.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses, and that only took us 7 tries.
Just about. Our episode today is about the oldest kind of monster. The name is not quite so old, but we are using the term chimera for all of those monsters that are a mix of something.
Chimera tend to be monsters that are half this, half that, or part this, middle part this, end part this, like our quote suggested. But the oldest monster on record, as best we can tell, was the Löwenmensch, which is half man, half lion. I believe it was German. So I think the lion was mountain lion. But it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to try to figure out how to create a monster if you're just taking Lego bits from this one and Lego bits from that one and sort of mashing them together.
And that really is what a chimera is. The term chimera comes from Homer's Iliad. That's kind of the earliest written record of it. But it's just a mix. And the reason why they're considered monsters is because they were seen as unnatural. Because they were a combination of things that should never be together, they should be feared.
Yeah, you see a lot of the mammal mixed with bird, mixed with humanoid, mixed with serpentine in some regard. If you have something that's somewhere between a cat and a dog, okay, that's not as terrifying as something somewhere between a cat and a hunting spider, because they're more separate.
And there's also a little subcategory of a chimera that tend to be riddlers, and we'll talk about the Sphinx a little bit later in this episode. So let's get into examples. One of the most common types of a chimera is a half-human of some kind.
of course, the first thing that comes to mind is centaurs and fauns. As somebody who grew up reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, fauns were a large part of my imagination. But you also have in Eastern cultures the tengu, which are a human-bird combination. There are a couple of different names for that, but that's the one that I learned first.
In Western cultures, adopted from Persia, was the manticore, where it's seen as having a human head, the body of a lion, and the tail of either a scorpion or...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.